Baskaran, sorry if I pronounce your name incorrectly. Rentas has been working with Adivasi children as an educator for nearly 3 decades in the Gudalu block of the Nilgiris district of Tamil Nadu. He's the co-founder of the Viswa Bharati Vidyadaya Trust. And his title today is Recapturing the Education Space, the Experience of Adivasi Community. Thank you very much and welcome, Randas.
I'm here on with Chinmay, my colleague. Together we have been preparing this presentation. And I'm also speaking on behalf of our team, particularly the Adivasi team. Adivasi means tribal team, which has been actually doing all the work. So on their behalf also, I'm talking over here. I'm very happy to be able to be part of this discussion on emergencies. It's a very interesting area and very important area of work. I have been part of two emergency situations in the past, an earthquake and a tsunami. And so I know what it is to have to face situations like this. And as Mark pointed out, if you can not allow a problem to become a crisis, then there's a lot of learning that can be done. And so we were able to really work on that whole situation, the COVID thing, because we were involved in two other things and learned very much from that. But here today, I really want to just quickly try to put together this presentation here, is to say how we responded from time to time very organically to situations of education that came up with this community, which is really the most marginalized community in the country. And I'm happy Professor Poonam Batra was there speaking earlier because she was able to give a very good context of the Indian situation. So I don't want to go into that at all. And we can move right into what our situation over here. We live in a place called Gudalur, which is the home of four different tribes over here: Paniya, Bettakurumba, Mullukurumba, and Kattanaika. They are the original inhabitants of this area. But over the last two centuries, this has also become a tea and coffee plantation thing since the British times. And these people have been consistently pushed to the margins into the forest. So we have a very large forest area over here. But in the early 80s, what happened is that the forests were taken over by the government and declared as sanctuaries, wildlife sanctuaries. The moment they were declared as wildlife sanctuaries, the people had no access even to the forest. So they were neither to the landed areas or to the forest. So this became a very difficult period for them. And in mid 85, when we started the work here, my colleagues started the work here, we found the people in a terrible state of mental distress. So that was the starting point of our work. The first thing that we did was to really bring the people together, to galvanize them into a movement to reclaim the land that they had lost. So it took over 3 years to go from village to village and bring people together. And it was only in 1988 that we had the first demonstration where we had 10,000 people coming together to fight for their rights. And this was really the beginning of the whole work. And right from that very time, we had a very decentralized body with each hamlet having its own leadership. And these federated into what was called the AM, Adivasi Munnetra Sangam, which is actually means the organization of the for the development of the tribal people. Even today, this body is the face of all the work that we do here, whether it's in the area of livelihood or education, housing, health. It is this organization that does that is the face of it. So a close look at the education status at that time showed that the literacy rate was barely 27%, and of the around 3,000 school going age children that were present, barely 300 children actually went to school. So when we talked to community members, they spelled out the reasons for this very clearly. First of all, they said that language was an issue, because the language of the tribal people was very different from the local language. The teachers didn't speak the language. The children didn't speak the local language either. Secondly, teachers discriminated against children depending on the names that they had, which are very different from the Hindu names, the clothes they wore. Teachers used a lot of corporal punishment. And one of the biggest issues was that the children who had the free run of the forest up until then now were confined within four walls. And the biggest challenge that the community found is that they could not understand why the knowledge systems and the culture of the tribal people had no place within the education program that was spelled out in the school. And this was a huge deterrent. So even today across the country, the largest number of dropouts come out from this particular community. So based on the demand of the community, we actually decided to set up a model school. But the day we took the children into the school, we also took 15 young people from the community who were all school dropouts and started to train them as teachers and as managers who could run the school as well as the education program. So this training of such youth has been an ongoing program whenever funds were available to us. But what is important here, I want to spell out, is that right at the very outset, we made it clear to the community, to these people, that this whole effort was theirs. It was their program, their school, and whatever inputs they required, we would give to them, training, finances, whatever. But at some point, we would step out and they have to develop this whole thing according to their imagination. So soon after the training was over, some of them moved into the school as teachers. The others became education coordinators in the villages. The villages are spread over we have around 320 hamlets spread over a 50 kilometer radius, many of them within inside the forest. So we needed to cover this area. We needed people out in the villages. Now the question was how to get the children from the villages into the schools. So the community organizers, the coordinators then went from village to village and got elderly people from the village to talk to the youth, to talk to the children and take them to schools. So we had a large number of these people who would actually herd children across the schools and bring them back on a daily basis. At the height of the program, we had, say, 75 village educators, that we call them, all elderly people. You can see one of them in the photograph there, taking over 1,400 children to school and back. So what I'm trying to say here is that that the whole community was involved in the whole process of education. It's not just some people here. They were right from the elders in the villages to the youth. Everybody was involved in this whole process. Now, our terrain is also very difficult. We have very heavy rainfall over here. There are wild animals, elephants, and many other animals also. We have streams to cross, so children need help to get to school. Today we have around 3,000 children attending over 70 schools in this whole landscape. But whenever issues of of come up about children in the schools. It's not any of us from here who actually go and attend to them. It's the village coordinators, the village education workers, it's the village leaders. They take responsibility and go and challenge the school teachers and headmasters. And so these are all issues that we have had to face on a more, almost daily basis in the beginning. So with that, all the discriminatory kind of practices that were there in the past stopped, corporal punishment stopped. The only thing that was still a problem was that of language. But they also, we were able to convince teachers that given a little time and patience, they could get children to also understand and learn the local languages. In a period of less than 10 years, the entire community had been galvanized to participate in this education process. Today, we do not have any village education workers, as parents send their children to school on their own. But from the very beginning, data on every single child is maintained and every single child is tracked from the time she enters school till the time she finishes school. So we have knowledge of every detail of all these 3,000 children. Now, I don't want to go into the details of the curriculum and the pedagogy at this point. But I'll just briefly mention here, because we are talking a lot more about the leadership aspects that we have been doing, that in the school and through our very camps that we conducted, because many of the children are out in various schools. So out of the 3,000 children, there are just a couple of hundred whom we have directly associated. The rest are going to government schools across the terrain. So we need to also engage with them. So we had a number of camps that we conducted over weekends, on holidays. And in these, we brought in a very important aspect, which is the cultural dimension. This cultural dimension, which we have brought even into the school syllabus, irrespective of whether the state wanted it or not, is to talk about the history and geography of the community. So not just their past, but also the history of the movement, everything comes into the school curriculum. So also the languages are spoken very freely in the school. The language, their stories and songs became part of the language curriculum. The dances and riddles, which is a very important way in which they communicate, all this became part of the school day. So the dancing, singing, all this was very much a part of this. We had elders from the villages and parents coming to talk about their lives and teach stories and songs, thus breaking the compartmentalization of school and home and actively building a continuum between school and the village. As a major chunk of the children went to other schools, as I mentioned, we had to have a number of these same programs out in the villages, also in the camps. So this is very important. We also ran after-school tutorials for children in many of the villages, but over time they collapsed as there were not enough educated people to run them, because we never brought in people from outside. It was always trying to get people from the community to take charge of the community. So also we ran libraries for children. The library was basically just a steel trunk which had puzzles and books which could be opened up over weekend. But again, these did not last over a period of time because the librarians were children from the school. So this was always a problem. Nevertheless, we had on a monthly basis, all these librarians and tutorial teachers came together. And we would have a number of sessions which are not just technical, but had to do with leadership, had to do with history, had to do with motivating them to continue their work and things like that. Eventually, all these interventions to base institutions of one kind or the other in the village finally paid off in a big way when it was most needed, during the pandemic. While the world took to online classes, we realized that the digital world can be far more discriminatory than our local school teachers. Neither smartphones nor computers were available to our children or parents. The sudden lockdown took us by surprise, and it was some months before we were allowed to travel to villages. Given the situation in the villages, our leaders informed us that the work we had put in over two decades would all disappear if we did not act fast to redeem the situation. Hence, here and there, older children were slowly going off to work, and if they got money, young girls were getting married off. Not sure how the community would respond, our staff were rather hesitant in our approach, but we were in for a surprise. Not only parents, but even children were enthusiastic to come together. Quickly, we started to look for volunteers who could lead these learning spaces and also provide physical spaces, rooms, verandas, whatever. But we also learned three things very quickly. One, that while the child was willing to come to a center, it was not interested in academics. Secondly, that the tutors were not equipped to teach. And thirdly, that parents who are mostly at home now were actually very keen on seeing what goes on in the learning space. Now, to come to the children in the centers, you see, the centers were, what we were trying to provide there were safe havens for children. So in an emergency situation, we realized that the most important thing is to be able to provide a safe haven. Because in any emergency, in any, children are the most affected. And it is for them that we need to be able to provide it. And it's not academics that makes all the difference. Quite the contrary, we have to use that space very creatively by providing games, providing cultural forms. We have to provide art and theater and things like this. Because this idea that we need to also use their lived experiences and convert them into ways by which we can get them to talk about it and use spaces like theater and all that to be able to actually live through those traumatic experiences and get over them is become very important. And so for us, we provided these spaces essentially just to be able to bring people together. So the kids, even dropout children who were dropped out of school were now slowly coming to these centers in order to be able to share that whole thing and talk about it and feel good about it. So this space became very, very important because they had things to do. Secondly, the community's tutors that they had selected definitely were not people, one big advantage was that many of them had attended our camps or they had been village librarians. So this was a huge advantage that we had, that whatever we had put over the last many years now paid off because these people were coming forward. So, and as volunteers, not paid staff, but as volunteers coming back to teach. So these people, now the only problem was that what would they teach? Do they know anything about teaching? These were issues that were really confronted us. And so for that, we had to develop worksheets, workbooks, and things like that. And they went through a series of trainings, and they're still going through the series of training so that they can use these worksheets to be able to teach children whatever they needed. So this, having the community there and as tutors was also a very important thing, because these people, when they had their training, did not come in merely again as just tutors, but as leaders. So here was a leadership program also going on side by side along with the whole tutorial teaching. The final thing that I want to mention here is also that, as Poonam was also talking about it, the state has usurped the whole area, the right to arbiter what needs to be taught. But when you take communities like ours, and you know, who have people who have had a tremendous experience of living, especially in the environment and taking care of the environment. And I think Poonam was talking about this thing of being anthropocentric kind of education that we have. While the Adivasi community has always lived in an environment and cared for that environment, conserved the environment and lived with animals and the birds and trees and everything. And here was their entire knowledge that they had unable to find a place within the whole education system. And so here in these learning centers that we have in the villages, we are able to bring that whole thing and parents and teachers, parents and community elders now find a place there. So for us, the pandemic has in many ways come as an opportunity to establish these centers in the villages, not as a temporary program, but as a permanent solution to be able to help people to get re-establish and reclaim their knowledge. So 30 years ago, we were talking about reclaiming the land that the people had lost. Now we are talking about reclaiming, revitalizing the movement to reclaim their knowledge and their culture. And for us, this has become a very important thing. And I think that because we have this huge leadership, localized leadership in the villages, even when the pandemic struck and we had to, for instance, the whole country was struggling to vaccinate people, we were able to bring the entire adult population together in a matter of 2 weeks and have them all vaccinated. So it was a record of sorts in the entire state that we were able to do. So this local leadership, the building up of the local leadership, these are all, I think, very important aspects that we were able to galvanize and put together in order to be able to respond to our thinking and take charge and reclaim our education space. I think I'll stop here and wait any questions that you want. Thank you.